is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio rays. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy and Ben? Can you feel it?
Right here. Yeah.
I feel it.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Diana, the laughing kitty of the Freedom Fiends. And with me, I have Ben, the bearded possum. Woo-hoo. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
And have Randy, the wampus cat. Hey, Randy.
Hi, Diana.
Was that a sound of the wampus cat you played?
Yes, it was. And I do not allow reuse of that by governments.
Good.
You own that sound.
I think I remember that sound from the old Mercury Cougar commercials.
I think it's kind of like the Wilhelm scream and the eagle scream. Like, there's just one.
Yeah.
One scream.
There is just one wampus cat scream.
Everybody used that forever.
So. We should probably explain what that BIPCOT no gov thing is for any new listeners that might be listening. When Michael was putting all this stuff together and setting everything all up, there was discussion about different licensing aspects, because, you know, anything on the radio and anything that's being produced and everything, there's all these layers and layers and layers of intellectual property laws. And speaking for myself, and this is, I've talked to Michael enough to know that Michael kind of believes pretty much the same way I do. I don't really believe that intellectual property laws are a legitimate thing, but we live in a world that's dominated by governments that inflict intellectual property laws upon people. And there are, there are actual IP trolls that go out there and look for opportunities to grab something that's not covered by some kind of licensing. And then they take control of it and then threaten to sue the person if they don't give them some money or whatever. And it's all illegal, it's right. Above board and everything, but that doesn't mean it's moral. So,
doesn't make it right.
Right. So in order to deal with this, to get the show on the road and get everything in a way that it's protected, and yet we still kind of have our tongue firmly in our cheek and our finger ready to poke it in the eye of seriousness. Michael, along with some other people that are probably smarter than me on this, came up with this BIPCOT no gov license. And you can read all about it on the website that Diana mentioned there. But that's kind of where we're coming from on it. It's not that we, you know, I mentioned one time I was on a forum board. This has probably been 6 or 7 years ago or so, maybe 5 years ago. And I mentioned that, the consistent libertarian / ANCAP / voluntarist position should always be that intellectual property laws are not legitimate, because, you know, it's you're basically licensing an idea or a thought or an opinion. Mm-hmm. And how can you own, if I say, hey, that's a pretty sky up there, it's nice and blue, that's thoughts that are coming in my head and that I'm expressing with my mouth. And if you look up and you see a blue sky and you think, wow, that's pretty, I don't have any right to your thoughts. And that's really the foundation of where intellectual property laws lie. It's the idea that you can own somebody else's thoughts, or that I can express thoughts, share them with you, and then after I share them with you, you can't do anything with it because I own the thoughts. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous on the surface. And then, people, again, that are smarter than me, people like Stephen Kinsella and others, have really gone through this and really looked at all the fine tacks in the tax, like the things that you push with your thumb, not mm-hmm. burdens of finance put on people by government. But anyway, people like that have looked through this and figured out how you could function without all this government interference into this process. And so it's not just something off of the top of our head. There have been very smart people, scholars. In the case of Stephen Kinsella, he is an IP attorney. And they have really looked at this and figured out what needs to be done what has to be done, what doesn't need to be done, and what is really destructive. And the more you get into it, the more you start to understand these things. And this is the same with a lot of the basic concepts that we rely upon for the philosophy that we embrace, which is mostly based on the non-aggression principle. And these things are not just something that we've come up with, you know, overnight in the last couple of days or the last few months or the last couple of years or just since Ron Paul ran in 2008 or something like this. This is something that people have been struggling with literally for thousands of years to develop the philosophy that we stand on. Isaac Newton said, when somebody questioned him about how that he was so smart and knowing all these things that he knew, he said, "I'm like a child walking on the beach, picking up pieces of shell and looking at them and being amazed by them. And when I see further than anyone else, it's because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants." And that's what we're doing. We stand we stand on the shoulders of people like Murray Rothbard and Ludwig von Mises and people like Henry Hazlitt.
Lysander Spooner.
And John Locke. And, I mean, the list just goes on. Frederick Bastiat. Going all the way back to, like, Augustine and well, I mean, even, you know, the words of Jesus that to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you is the very basis of the non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
So that's my little rant there, but maybe kind of explains.
I like that rant. I enjoyed it tremendously. and I think we were going to actually talk about, you know, the philosophy of most, I guess, libertarians or voluntarists that I think that we, or at least I know I adhere to, and I think that we mostly agree on. Otherwise, I don't know that we would necessarily be hanging out together so much. But, you know, so please, you know, Ben, continue talking about, you know, this whole idea, because I do think that a lot of folks who are listening don't necessarily get it. You know, it's like, but we have to vote for someone, right? I mean, you know, it's like we got to get out there and we got to have our voices heard. I mean, I know for a long time, most of my life, I thought that that was really the best way to get my voice heard was to go vote. And if I didn't vote, then I had no one to blame but myself when things went wrong.
Why don't you start? You know, you mentioned the non-aggression principle. Would you have a quick and dirty definition of that?
Sure. So it's real basic. It's real simple, and it's kind of something that's intuitive to every 2 or 3 year old. You know, you don't have to be some great mind to understand these things. You don't have to have vast hours and hours of university education. It's really this simple. No one has the right to initiate aggression upon someone else. Now, this is not self-defense. If someone is attacking you, you certainly have the right to defend yourself up and to the point of repelling that person, or even, according to some people are pacifists and they don't believe that. But what we tend, we are speaking collectively, but what we tend to look at.
Well, me and Randy, anyway.
Yeah.
the three of us.
We feel that it's perfectly legitimate to defend yourself, even up to the point of, terminating someone if you have to. But
Well, the key there would be that the person who is defending themselves, their property, or other persons, is not initiating force.
Yeah, yeah.
It's purely responsive or remedial force. Or preventive force, even.
Right.
But the idea there is that you just need to distinguish between the initiation of force against others.
Mm-hmm. And, what Ben was saying about, you know, any 2 and 3 year old can understand this. I think all three of us have raised kids, and speaking for myself, I know that one of the very first things that I taught my daughter was basically the golden rule. You know, it's if you do not want this done to you, then you should not do this to others. So, you know, if you don't want to be bitten, which she was kind of in trouble in preschool for biting, if you don't want to be bitten, then you shouldn't bite. And I also talked to her about the pain she was inflicting. You know, think about the pain you're inflicting. So I kind of try to teach her a little, you know, compassion and everything. Think about the pain that you're inflicting on someone when you're biting them. That hurts. You know, do you really want to hurt other people? You know, and so it really is quite simple. It's not like rocket science, and you know, and can be easily understood and followed. And it's very basic to my philosophy in terms of being an ANCAP voluntarist, whatever label you want to put on me.
Okay, now how would you distinguish followers of the non-aggression principle, or that this definition of that? Many people that adhere to that, well, call themselves libertarians, mm-hmm. which I mean, I would agree with, but there are other people that call themselves libertarians that do not adhere to that, and that may be problematic. The word voluntarist is often used in that no one should be forced to, people should only have to act voluntarily and not mm-hmm. under force right. from other people. But how would you guys distinguish between people who call themselves constitutionalists or small government?
I used to be conservatives. One of those.
but we have a whole lot in common. If we were on the road to getting to a stateless society, I mean, somewhere along the way, I think we'd make them perfectly happy. And then when we got as far as they were willing to go, maybe, I don't know if they'd be happy anymore or not, or maybe they'd be happy to go the rest of the way. I don't know. What do you think?
I try to be as friendly with constitutionalists as possible, because very often times they are so close to being with us in the battle.
Yeah.
That it's very discouraging to, you know, to really be rough with them and talk down to them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it's usually not productive to humiliate yeah. somebody anyway. But on the other hand, you know, what I've tried to point out to small government constitutionalists or other conservatives or small government is, you know, in the long run, they're really desiring to use government to do the things they think are important. The things that they think are not going to get done otherwise. But the sad part is, that's exactly what the most big government liberal believes also. But we'll get more of this when we get back from the market.
Yeah.
Stick
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends on the radio.
Freedom Fiends.
Fiends
That's
for
right.
freedom. So right before the break, I was talking about, I made kind of what to some people might think is like a crazy, crazy statement that mm-hmm. You know, when the conservative, the small government Republican or the constitutionalist, and they say, you know, if we could just shrink government back down to that size
yeah.
that I imagine it used to be back, 200 years ago, and if we could just get it down to that mm-hmm. and things would be better.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily...
Under the founding fathers.
Yeah. And we don't necessarily disagree that a smaller, weaker government is a good thing. We're not saying that that's
It's better than
case.
What we have.
Yeah, exactly. But really, you know, if you get into the principles, the foundational concepts of what you're having, what you're doing, What you're really saying is, I want government to do the things I want government to do, and I want it big enough and powerful to do the things that I think are important.
And, right.
You know, whether that's, let's say you want a good, strong military to defend the country. And why do you want that? Because you don't want people coming invading us and, you know, lording over us and doing all these horrible things. Well, that's, nobody's arguing against that. That seems legitimate. And you want a big enough, strong enough government to provide you with police protection so that you're safe walking down the street. Well, nobody wants criminals to be beating us up, you know. Or you want a government that's strong enough to make sure that, you know, when you get old, that you're not going to starve to death. Or you're, and the more things you start to think about, the more things you want government to do. Well, I don't want people to starve to death when they're poor, so I want government to help not everybody, not people who are too lazy to work, but just the ones who can't help themselves, that are disabled or whatever, that are really old. Okay, it's fine for government to help those people. Mm-hmm. But this never ends. This is a process thought that if that you're starting on a flawed basis, and everything that you know, going back to the Bible thing again, the Bible says that it's what you build your house upon that determines what the house, what the structure is like later on. So if you build it upon an unstable structure to begin with, then eventually at some point in time, that thing's going to collapse. And this is the problem with coercive government, government that is based on aggression, based on stealing from some people to give to others, and taking the will of some people and forcing it upon others, even when there's no bringing aggression into a situation where there was not aggression already. That's what we see with the basis of government. And so,
you know, Ben, you bring it to the non-negotiable point when you said the stealing part, because when you're talking about the small government conservative or the constitutionalist, a lot of those people would go almost to the non-aggression principle in many things. I mean, they say there should be no welfare state. There should be no public education. There should be none of these things. It should be a minimal government where the only thing we have is protection, courts, prisons, maybe roads, but certainly nothing, things that everybody would agree are good things. I mean, roads are good things, and libraries are good things, and even helping the poor, people that can't take care of themselves, are good things. But even when government gets shrunk down so much that it does nothing but good deed doing stuff, it still has to steal.
Yeah.
And you know, you were invoking the New Testament there a little bit ago. Well, I would invoke Romans 3:8, which stands for the proposition that you cannot do evil so that good may result.
Right.
And if any you know, anyone subscribes to Judeo-Christian thought, how do you get around the idea that you at least have to do some evil, that of stealing money, who don't want to give it to you, so that you can go around doing good? And that's really the crux of it. And the difference, I think, between a real voluntarist or how would be the word? I like Gerard Casey's designation. He calls us libertarian anarchists. Of course, that's a scary word, but I guess the word
not
libertarian.
Not to me, it's not.
I know, but a lot of people say that it is.
Abolitionist.
He does say, and I actually really, really like that one a lot.
Yeah.
I like abolitionist.
I like all those words. If they're pointing to the right thing. The poor anarchist thing, though, is that, you know, it's still the guys with long beards and bombs. No offense, Ben.
So
I don't think you have any bombs.
So when you're talking about stealing from others, you know, to in order to be able to, I guess we'll come back and then can finish that thought after a visit to the market.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Roxy, no.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Ear hole. So we had a fun discussion during the break. We were talking about Paul's, was it second letter to Timothy?
Second letter to Timothy, which is, you know, it's usually thought to be the very last letter that Paul wrote to anyone before he had his head cut off by the emperor. Yeah. And it's kind of, you read, it's kind of a sad, kind of a bittersweet sort of a letter, you know, where he acknowledges that he's at the end of his life and it's about over with.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we were talking about, you know, certain verses in the Bible that Christians use to show that we should always obey the government. And Paul's epistle to the Romans you know, is always dragged out to show that disobedience to the government, you know, is absolutely not an option. And, you know, it says in that, it says the rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. And says, then do what is good and you will receive, you know, the ruler's approval, for he is God's servant for good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. And everyone takes that as being completely, you know, so statist. You
got to really
do everything they say.
Yeah. But,
you know, when you start,
a lot of Christians use that.
Yeah, but, you know, you start out and you say, well, okay, do we really have to obey, you know, obey everything they say? You know, you start out, first of all, you have the examples of the apostles in the New Testament. I mean, there have to be exceptions to always obey the government rule. You know, first of all, you have the thing where the leaders dragged, you know, St. Peter and the apostles in before them and said, you need to stop this and stop your preaching and saying what you're saying and doing what you're doing. And, you know, they looked them in the eye and said, we obey God rather than men. And basically saying, if there's a law that tells us to do what is wrong, we won't obey it. There's your first kind of law that, you know, you're not supposed to obey. And then, you know, the other thing I think that we, you know, don't think about it, that there is a huge area of law that everybody has to obey. We must obey laws that prohibit.
Gravity is one.
No, I don't mean those. I mean laws that say don't hurt other people.
Right,
don't steal,
yeah.
Don't cheat, yeah. You know, things like that. It wouldn't matter if we had a state
natural
or not.
Law.
You would have to obey that law or you would suffer the consequences of it. So now we're here. We don't have to obey, you know, the bad laws. The good laws, government
we would obey
is just
anyway.
Because we would have to obey
exactly.
Those no matter what.
Yep.
So the only thing you're left after that is just this nanny state stuff where they're either punishing us because we don't live exactly according to their demands. And, of course, they steal money from us to make everybody do what they want us to do. And so you have this third class that, most of us obey most of those laws, but not because there's a moral obligation, but because we do it out of self-defense. And I understand that. I mean, I obey those. I mean, I pay my taxes. And, you know, I guess if I knew that I could get away with not doing it, that it'd be a little bit different.
Right. If you could end up not in a cage.
But it seems like, you know, there's so many things wrong with this idea that you always have to do what the government says that you need to just step back a little bit. There's in that same Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans, you know, he says, if you owe taxes, pay taxes, pay revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, honor to whom honor is due. Wow. I mean, I've been gone to court and had someone say to the judge, well, you're with all due respect, Your Honor, you know, and the judge, unless they're a complete fool, I mean, you'd have to be an idiot not to know that you're being insulted when someone offers you all the respect that you are due. I mean, think about that. That's just,
exactly. When you hear someone, when you hear someone say that with all due respect, you know that something's coming after that, and you
that they're disrespecting
like
you.
Exactly.
And so
it's kind of like the southern phrase that one person will say, like,
"Bless your heart."
Yeah, you bless her heart. You know, so and so bless her heart.
Right.
so that you know, there's kind of this undercurrent there of disrespect when you say, "Well, pay him the honor that he is due." Yeah, like none. And so,
exactly.
And then you come to the Second Timothy, which now the subversiveness and the disrespect for the state. I mean, it comes out from underground if you know the context of it.
Yeah,
because this
is
around.
Context is very important.
Yeah, it was in the year 66 AD, and I just wrote something on my blog about this. Anybody wanted to go to freeisbeautiful.net. But in the year 66 AD, the Emperor Nero, he left Rome. He was going to compete in the Olympic Games and also make a concert tour of Greece. The dude thought he was a rock star, you know, singing and playing his lute or whatever it was. And he went to Mount Olympia where the games were held. And at Olympia, he competed in, get this, the four-horse chariot race. And this comes from the historian Suetonius, who wrote the 12 Caesars. And Suetonius reported that Nero drove his chariot with at least 10 horses. So the guy cheats. He cheats. And the emperor, he got thrown out of his chariot during the race, had to be picked up, dusted off and everything, put his hat back on him or whatever he had, you know, and sets him back in the chariot. He can't stay in. He falls out again. He has to give up the race before he gets to the end. But since he was the emperor, the judges crowned him the winner anyway, and he got up, and he was very pleased, very happy about how it ended with him winning the race, and declared that province to be a free country and gave big bribes to all the judges, and everybody left happy. But of course, he looked like a complete idiot, and this, you know, humiliation really that came spread through the empire like wildfire. Would have been fresh news when this guy got back to Rome, and it was only a short time afterward, probably a short time afterward, they're not absolutely sure about the timing, that he had the Apostle Paul beheaded.
Right.
But my thought was that, is there a connection between Nero's race and the letter that St. Paul penned from this prison cell in Rome right before his death that he wrote to Timothy? Because he said, an athlete is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. The time of my departure, he's talking about his death, my departure has come. I have fought the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
I have finished the race, he wrote. Henceforth is laid up for me the crown of righteousness. And it's just like, bang, 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 take this, Nero. He's slapping the snot out of the guy. You know, Nero, he also competed. He never finished the race. He didn't compete according to the rules, yet he was awarded the crown. You know, you read the whole thing in context, and there isn't the slightest doubt.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the slightest doubt that Paul was taking his swipes, a joke here at Nero's expense. And if Nero was due respect for simply being the emperor, as Romans 13 is so often read, then St. Paul failed to follow his own rule. And if he didn't follow his own rule, then maybe you need to reconsider this always do the government respect and do whatever they say.
Right.
I think that there were a lot of things back in those days that were said tongue-in-cheek with a wink and a nod, just like the incident where Jesus said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's,
right,
when
they asked
if he should pay
so
the tax.
Much.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That one is another one where all of the people knew that he was saying, oh, no, you don't pay the tax.
That's even used by a lot of people who are libertarians or anarchists that are also atheists against religion or against Christianity. They use that as well.
Oh, you mean by saying that Christians,
you know, oh, but
have to pay
Christians
the tax,
think that, yeah. Yeah, Christians, you know, think you should pay tax because of this scripture, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, when that incident happened, you know, the people thought that he was saying don't pay it. The Romans, you know, they thought that he was saying, oh, okay, give to Caesar what's Caesar. Well, everything belongs to Caesar, so I guess Jesus is saying paying the tax. But if you want to get the interpretation of what the truth was. You only had to wait. I think this happened like right before Jesus' arrest, because when they brought Jesus in front of Pontius Pilate, they said, this man is perverting our nation and is teaching the people not to pay the tax.
They figured the joke out afterwards. It's kind of like,
well, no,
it's a sleeper.
The Jewish leaders, the Jewish leaders knew the joke,
right?
And they had to clue in the dumb Romans as to what Jesus really said, because they just heard what was on the surface and didn't get it because they're kind of boneheaded. I don't know what, you know, a lot of politicians, but anyway, there's so much in there that I don't think you can say that, well, if you read, you know, the New Testament, you know, the Christian idea is to always obey the government, and that it's not. Mm-mm, and if you get in and look at it closely enough, you realize that there's this real subversive thing, and that the Apostle Paul, he has so many things that are written that the state can use. I mean, back 200 years ago, they were quoting Paul writing, "Slaves, obey your masters." And like to support slavery,
right?
That was in there for the purpose of self-defense. You know, this right now, the entire economy of the entire earth back in early, you know, Roman times, New Testament times, was based on slavery. And if Christianity as a belief system, as a religion, was going to ever spread or anything, they were not going to take on slavery right now. And so he said, slaves, obey your masters. But if you look at the more private writings, you find out that Paul did not consider slavery good and advised other Christians to free their slaves.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think it was good. But when it came to a policy of the Christian church about being anti-slavery or not, they were not about to die on that hill in the first century. Which they would have.
I've been quoted out of context like that as well, and I'm not comparing myself to Paul, but I have been doing a podcast, and I've said things like, you know, blah blah blah, Tesla did this, blah blah blah, that and that, and immediately a detractor against me says he's comparing himself to Tesla. I didn't compare myself to Tesla. I mean, you have to be an idiot to think I'm comparing myself to Tesla. But they take things out of context like that in order to attack you. And the same thing with Paul and with Jesus, where you say, like for instance, in my case, I have said things like, you know, if you're going to be an activist, if you're going to be out there doing stuff for the so-called liberty movement, have your car registered, have your license up to date, keep your insurance with you, because they'll get you on those little things.
Right, on those now, little things, yep.
That's not saying that stuff's good. It's saying self-protection. Take care of yourself. Play the game wise. Anyway, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Finishing up the first hour. Talking about all kinds of stuff. Boy, we have covered the gamut in this hour. Everything from theology to... What were we talking about when we very first... Oh, copyright. Intellectual property. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, you were saying, Ben, that, you know, you quoted Tesla, and someone came after you and said, you're comparing yourself to Tesla. I don't quote people to make myself equal to them. I think it's pretty obvious that when you quote someone, you know, that in a good context, you're admitting that they're better than you in that particular subject. At least their words are better than you, or you to use your own words. And of course, the less honest person will recast their words and take them for themselves, which they can get away with if they have a BIPCOT no government license covering them.
Yeah.
Unless they belong, they're part of the government, and then they won't get away with it because they will suffer the sanctions of the BIPCOT no government license. You know, we never mention that on the show, but the sanctions, even against the government, are not very onerous, though, are they?
Well, we promise to shame them and make fun of them.
Yes, but shame them and make fun of them. And kind of the way that is worded at the beginning of each hour is sort of making fun before they violate it, isn't it?
Well, that's kind of the same, you know, wink and nod. It's dog whistles. It's talking in a way that we understand what we're saying, even when our enemies don't. And that's exactly what Jesus was doing when he was talking about, you know, paying Caesar what Caesar's due, and what Paul was talking about when he talked about giving honor where honor is due. Sure, but
that's true. That's true.
It's kind of an inside joke that we understand.
Yeah.
Inside joke. You know, it's kind of, we're talking about.
We should be talking about this on the air.
Oh, we are.
Are we on the air?
Yeah.
We are on the air. Yeah. No, but the inside joke thing, you know, that the render to Caesar was totally an inside joke thing. Now, the thing with Nero and the race, that was probably the most open joke in the entire empire when he wrote that.
Right.
Because everybody in the world knew what had happened with Nero in Greece. But there was one other incident, I think, that happened before the render to see. There was another incident where Jesus was asked, well, should we pay the temple tax? Now, the temple tax was a little different. The tax in render to Caesar was the tax to be paid to the Romans. The temple tax was more of, it was kind of a blend between civil and religious obligations. And even then, when they asked Jesus, you know, should we pay the tax, Jesus told St. Peter to go throw his net or his hook in the water and catch a fish, and got the fish and opened it up, and in the fish's mouth was the coin made for the temple tax. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And Jesus said, and when you pay it, you're not paying it because there's a moral obligation to pay it. Just go pay it, because we're not here, you know, to abolish taxes. You know, we're here for a much larger purpose, and it's just to keep the peace. And that's very clear, you know, in that particular story. And these things just sort of multiply out, where you see that a lot of, there are certain, I don't know, concessions in that are made that, you know, Jesus in his wisdom decided were going to be made. And he said, he go get the coin and go pay the tax. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the tax ought to be paid. I'm just saying in this instance, pay it, because that's not where we're fighting about today, you know, or whatever.
And that's where I'm at.
I think that happens frequently.
That's where I'm at with things like, you know, paying your registration on the car and keeping your license up to date and keeping your insurance.
You bet.
Because here's the thing, like, if you're gonna be an activist and you're gonna risk getting pulled over because you don't have the little stupid little tag on your license plate, and you're looking at maybe $500-$600 fine for that. And maybe even, according to where you're at, if you're traveling cross-country, you might be stuck with a night in jail, or who knows what's going to happen to you because of that. And you're going to end up paying a lot more, not always, not in all cases, but you have the potential of paying a lot more to the government than if you had just paid the $40 or $50 or $60 to register. And so what have you accomplished? You made a point, but in the long run, you lost more out of it. And you risk your hands being tied into the grip of the government, which is never a safe thing. You should avoid that whenever possible.
Yeah, and you know, and I want to be careful, though. I don't criticize people that want to activism in that way.
Right.
But it's not for everybody. And it certainly isn't for anybody who doesn't go into it with their eyes wide open and know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's very important, too.
So we're going to be right back after this. Don't let the news get you down. Stick with us.
Worms.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is governed by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Randy England with the Freedom Fiends. I'm here with Diana, and hey. I am with Ben. And I think before the break, we were about to move into a little different subject, and we were talking during the break, I should say, about what it's like to survive or encounter disasters and perhaps survive them. What the differences would be like between with the government and if you didn't have the state to save you. Is that about what you were thinking, Diana or Ben? What do we got going on that?
Yeah. Go ahead, Diana.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I think that was our thought process around this. And Ben actually, you know, had the idea, and kind of the first thing that popped in my mind was Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath of that, and you know basically the failure of the government in any way, shape, or form to really to mitigate that disaster, and I know that just having seen or having witnessed a few situations in my area, and I live in North Carolina, and I actually was experienced Hurricane Fran, which came through Raleigh as a Category 1 hurricane, and nobody really thought it was going to be as bad as it was, and it was much, much worse. And you know, there were trees down everywhere. It was very difficult to get around anywhere in the city by a car. Most people lost their electricity, and many were without electricity for weeks on end. And this was still in the summertime. This was in September. And it just one of the things I remember that was striking about it was, you know, there wasn't really much in the way of evacuations. People wrote it out here because it just, yeah, no one was expecting it. So afterwards, though, that, you know, many neighbors, you know, really helped each other without any sort of government intervention, without the government coming in and saying, you know, you guys need to help each other, blah, blah, blah. You know, and the government didn't swoop in to these neighborhoods and start to remove trees and that kind of thing. I mean, it, you know, later on down the road, I mean, yeah, the, you know, waste department, I think, mostly got involved with removing timber, you know, that had, you know, all the timber. And I just remember weeks and weeks of timber removal and burning just for weeks on end. It just blew my mind. I mean, it was, but, you know, before that, though, people were helping each other. People were helping each other cut the trees up that were down. People, you know, were helping each other. If someone, say, had a generator, you know, they would invite their neighbors over. So there was a lot of that, you know, just kind of spontaneous order. And but there was also a lot of people that expected the government to right away come, you know, swoop in and save everything and fix everything. And I do think that there's probably an economic factor to that, you know, where, you know, people that were a little more impoverished and maybe had depended on the state for a lot of their own resources expected that more. And I think, you know, personally, I think, and I think a lot of people believe that the state generates or, you know, kind of generates this mindset that they are our savior, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, without that, you know, I mean, there was plenty going on, people helping each other without the government. And with Katrina, you know, I mean, there that's a whole show by itself, I think. So,
yeah,
so then what are your thoughts about it?
Katrina would be a perfect example of the complete failure of government, failure ahead of time, failure to have the you know, everybody believes that, not everybody, but a lot of people believe that the government has put together all these great things, the roads, the pumping systems, the dams, the levees, and all these things, and that's, you know, they're going to save us with all that stuff. And then with Katrina, that's the stuff that failed. And then,
the levees were messed up to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they were in need of repair to begin with.
And the levels of government corruption ahead of Katrina had rendered communities, not just you know, New Orleans, but communities all over, levels and levels of government corruption had wasted, you know, all kinds of resources and money that could have been used in preparation for these things. But instead it went to fill, you know, politicians' pockets and Uncle Louie's construction company and all the cronyism and the nepotism and all the stuff that is common in government had swallowed up so much resources that what was left, the crumbs on the table, is what was left to prepare for something like Katrina. And then when it hit, you know, the government's initial reaction is always going to be the same in a disaster, and that is a fist. They're going to come in hard, they're going to come in with a fist, and they're going to use force and aggression and try to force everybody to act in a certain way. And so you have, like, the classic thing was, there was an actual priest on the street that was in, you know, normal clothes. He was not dressed up in a priest outfit, but he was just a priest, and he was standing on the street. And a cop comes up. If I recall, he was a horse-mounted cop, but I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly. And starts roughing the guy up. And then we have, like, the famous story, whether it's a lie or not, that a famous sniper told about shooting people almost for sport during Katrina. That's the mentality of these government thugs. They want to come in and use aggression and dominate over everybody. And they actually blocked convoys of supplies coming into the area that would have helped them, because they blocked the Red Cross, they blocked Walmart, because, you know, it wasn't within the regimentation of what the government was allowing for that particular disaster. It was really, it's just piles and piles of government failure when you look at something like that.
I remember that a lot of so many private charities were denied. In fact, at the time, the church that I was going to at the time, they sent a mission. They were going to send a mission to New Orleans, but they weren't allowed. So they ended up going to a small city, you know, outside of New Orleans. And I couldn't believe it. It's like, so you're not accepting help from wherever you can get it? I couldn't believe it.
Well, the same thing happened in Haiti after that really bad earthquake hit Port-au-Prince.
Oh, yeah,
Haiti.
I was thinking about that, too. Yeah, I was thinking about that as well.
The government's initial reaction is, first off, you have to understand that these people that are in charge of government have a deep-set distrust for all of us peon masses that are out here, you know, us lessers. They have a real deep-set mistrust of us, and they see any kind of disaster like that as a situation where they might lose control. And so their reaction is always going to be that aggressive, you know. And so in Haiti, they started rounding people up and shoving them into camps. And starvation and disease were rampant, and all these things were going on in the camps because the government had forced the people into those camps. And the answer was, well, we can't have these people just wandering around in the rubbles of the city. They might get hurt. So, you know, so yes, Nanny, I understand. You're gonna tie my arms behind my back.
You know it's best.
Yeah, you're going to duct tape my face shut, and you're going to tie my hands behind my back so I don't hurt myself. Thank you, Nanny. But that, you know, that's kind of the mentality that they have. But human beings don't react like that when there's not the fist of the state present. I was up in Ohio when the remnants of Hurricane Ike came through. And you think, well, Ohio, how could you have anything from a hurricane in Ohio? But when I came up through the Midwest, it ripped through, you know, Kentucky and Ohio and all through that area. It took our roof off in Springboro, Ohio. Not the entire roof, but a good portion of the roof it took off. And it did a lot of damage in our neighborhood. The electricity was out. I think our house was out for 12 days, and my son's up closer towards Dayton, he was out for like 14 days. And during that time, the little community that we were in had no outside, you know, there was no cops, there was no ambulance services, there was nothing. We were left to totally to ourselves. And so right. What you ended up having.
And you survived. Look at you. Yeah,
it was great. It was actually kind of wonderful because, you know, people came out of their houses. As soon as the wind stopped, people
they
came out of their
houses. They do that, yeah.
And they checked on each other's neighbors, and they checked, you know, is so-and-so, this elderly lady down here, is she okay? Is your house going to be okay if it rains? Do you have a tarp? And everybody was stepping up like that, and there was absolutely no indications of government. We were all left alone. Mm-hmm. And there was no looting, and there was no robbing, and there was nothing like that because these right. people were not dependent upon government to begin with. And, you know, even after like at the third day, we were out in front of our house sitting in the driveway because it was kind of warm. You didn't want to be in the house. So we're out sitting on the driveway and these people come walking by and they said, hey, do you know about the potluck on the other side of the block? And we're like, no, what do you, you know, evidently all these people, their freezers are starting to thaw. So everybody decided, hey, you know, let's just have a big cookout and the meat that's in our freezers.
I remember that. In my experience, it was like that too. Yeah.
And so there was a big thing and people brought their grills and brought their, you know, their gas-fired stoves and all this stuff. And they kind of congregated in one area and they cooked chili and they made hamburgers and hot dogs. And we had a bunch of bacon that we had stored away. And, you know, and plus I had a very active garden. I was a very active gardener. So I picked a bunch of tomatoes and everybody just shared. And there was no aggression. It was a peaceful, wonderful community thing. And you get to see the true nature of people when something like that goes on.
What a shame it would be if the government had been able to get there sooner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it would have denied that whole community thing.
Experience, yeah.
You know, I mean, when you take something from one person by force and then give it sort of anonymously to another person, it may feed that person that needed something, but all of the other fantastic things that happen, like happened in your neighborhood with the neighbors coming together and feeding each other, none of that happens. Nobody's grateful.
Right.
You know, for the I mean, if the government comes, I mean, you wouldn't even know who to be grateful to. I mean,
right.
If you thought it over, you go, well, the government stole this from somebody, so that guy that he stole it from isn't exactly feeling warm and fuzzy about me right now. It's good that they don't get there quick.
Yeah. So we're going to slip away to the market. We'll be right back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
It hurts.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
The Freedom Fiends. We are back. Back from the market.
Yeah. You know, I should also mention something that happened here recently. We were, for anybody, I don't know if I've said anything about it this time or not. I say it almost every show. My wife and I are full-time RVers. We're these old people that drive around in motorhomes around the country and just enjoying our retirement years.
And, y'all are not old. Whatever.
So we're in southern Alabama currently, and not long ago we were in a campground, and a storm, you know, the way the Gulf is, all the experts and the meteorologists and all these people, they can say, oh yeah, it's going to be clear. You might have a few scattered clouds, and there you have a 10% chance of a shower or whatever. And then the Gulf Stream just says, you know what, change my mind, here's a storm. And, you know, you get no warning. Well, we were in a campground, and we had our awning out. We have this nice big motorhome RV, and we've got our awning out, and we've got all of our outside equipment out. We've got like an outside oven, and we've got an outside cooler that's, you know, electric cooler, and all this stuff is out there, and we cook half the time out there. And we've got, you know, our chairs and all this kind of stuff. And my wife looks on the internet or what, I'm not sure exactly what keyed her, but then she looked on the internet and she said, there's a storm coming at us. We better do something. It's coming here fast and it's coming heavy. And it was totally, the weather people didn't know was coming. So we jumped up, ran outside, pulled in the awning, you know, secured all the stuff that was going to get blown away, grabbed all the electrical stuff that was outside, brought it in, got everything all secured. And about the time we got everything into the RV, the wind hit, and we're looking at like 50, 60 mile an hour winds, which under the wrong circumstances in an RV, that can get pretty dangerous. And
but it was the Weather Bureau that gave you the heads up, though, right?
We got that enough of a warning to run away from it. But
there's a storm a brewing.
And oftentimes in a situation like that, we'll lock everything up and actually hit the road and drive counter to it and just drive away from it. But we weren't able to this time. But the storm came through the RV park that we're in, and one of the RVs, it took a tree, and they're not calling it a tornado, but it twisted the tree like a tornado would and just ripped it right in half in the main trunk of the tree and just dropped that whole huge big oak tree right on an RV and just destroyed this RV.
Oh my gosh.
Another big one fell into the clubhouse of the RV resort that we're in. And there was, I'm going to say, conservatively estimating maybe 8 to 10 awnings of people who didn't get their awnings in quick enough. And the wind, even though they're strapped down and they're secured, the wind just grabs those things and whips them around like they're a toy.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, we had around us, the RVs around us, probably the closest, say, 6 RVs close to us or so, probably all received $500 to $800 worth of damage each. The one that the tree hit is totaled. That's probably $80,000 down the drain. But and the point, and I've told about this before, but the point in this is that as soon as the storm cleared enough to where people could get out, people swarmed out of their RVs. These are people who don't know each other. They're all strangers. We're all just in an RV park. And they swarmed over, and they made sure there was no one trapped in the RV that had got crushed. And they helped the people,
of course, yeah.
You know, people got their ladders out, and people got the awnings untied from, you know, got them all down, cut them off of there, and got the metal twist that was all twisted and wrapped around. They got that taken down. They started jump up there. Who's got a chainsaw? Who's got this? Who's got that? And it was like ants. It was like watching ants attack a problem. And they just went in there and swarmed all over this. And, of course, they don't solve everything, but all this happened, and I didn't hear a single siren. There was no cops. There was no, you know, no government disaster people showed up. There were no, you know, and fortunately no one was hurt.
FEMA.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just the natural reaction of people to respond to their neighbor, a person they don't even know, to reach out and lend a hand to them. Because you don't know. It could be me. It could have been me just as easy.
Yeah.
Hey, got a question.
Mm-hmm.
This time you're talking about you did not run from the storm.
Right.
But You have run from the storm in the past, though, right?
Right, correct. Yeah, we.
What's the furthest you ever had to run from a storm after you made the decision to hit the road?
We had one where tornadoes were coming through. We grabbed everything, put it away. We were on the road in about 10 minutes, and we were actually watching, you know, trash cans and dumpsters flying behind us. We
wow.
We drove for about 30 miles ahead of it before it changed the direction from the road that we were on. So yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
I'm thinking that could get scary. You know,
it's fun.
If it was a tornado, I'd definitely run too.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Diana, Ben, and Randy on the Freedom Fiends.
Hey, Freedom Fiends. That's right.
We're here.
We're back, Diana.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted
to... We're back, yeah.
I wanted to, since I had Randy on the phone, I wanted to ask him his opinion on some stuff that is way off the topic of anything we've talked about so far.
Is this the lawyer thing now?
Yeah,
is that what I am now?
Yeah. Can't let Randy get away.
You can tell when that's coming, can't you, Randy? You're like, oh yeah, it's going to be legal stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
I could be wrong, but I suspect it's like being a lawyer is probably like being a doctor in the sense that you can't go anywhere without people, you know, all of a sudden, what? You're an attorney? Let me ask you a question. Yeah.
Well, at least people don't show me their wounds.
Yeah.
Right. You know. Hey, do you know what this thing here is?
Yeah. That's a mole. You ought to have it looked at.
You are a juris doctor, though. You are a juris doctor.
Doctor jurisprudence.
You don't call lawyers doctors, even though they have this doctorate. Although, I was my first semester, first lecture in contracts class, the professor said, I've had some people asking me, how come when you finish up this 3-year program and get your Juris Doctor, how come you don't have to have people call you a doctor? And he said, it just isn't done. And he said, but there is an exception. And that is, you're allowed to call yourself doctor when you make reservations, like at a nice restaurant or something. It's not exactly really kosher, but it's legal, and nobody can say it's not. You know, he said. Otherwise, we don't use that, and we don't. I think the reason we don't is that people would make even more lawyer jokes.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that's kind of pretentious.
You know. Although it's not that pretentious, you know, doctors, they prefer to be called physicians, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, you know, I don't know. I just prefer to be called a lawyer. So, if anything, I mean, even the attorney thing sounds highfalutin to me. But anyway, you were going to ask me something that had to do with the law, so go ahead.
Well, yeah,
shoot me with it.
On the TV show Better Call Saul that we've talked about.
Oh, I love that show so much.
I'm so sorry it's over for the season.
Yeah. in that, the Jimmy's brother, who is a highly respected lawyer.
Chuck.
He kind of makes
or Chuckles, as he was known as a teenager.
He kind of makes a besmirching remark about lawyers that advertise. And, you know, Jimmy says something like, well, you know, it's legal now or something like that. And then Chuck quotes the decision that allows attorneys to advertise. Are you familiar with the scene?
That was decades ago that decision was also.
Yeah.
I do remember that. And, mm-hmm. you know, those, the, attorneys, lawyers that opposed that were always the ones that already had theirs. You know, the big firms, the old respected firms, where, you know, they were born, they had a silver spoon in their mouth 100 years ago. Well, of course, they didn't need to advertise. You know, it was only the poor guy who just got out of law school 5 minutes ago and didn't know any rich lawyers who finally won the right to advertise, won the right to free speech. Give me a break. You know.
Is that still something that lingers among attorneys that some of them kind of look down their nose at these new upcoming lawyers that you know have their face on billboards and so forth? Or is that really just a make-believe thing?
No, it is. They definitely look down on it. And they even have, you know, in the rules, they make sure that, you know, we lawyers that do advertise, I don't do much of that myself anymore, but I just have an internet web page and do what's necessary to be on the first page of Google. But if they have a notice that the Supreme Court requires you to have, and this is in most states, I think, where it's you have to have a notice that tells your clients, potential clients, who must be just as dumb as dirt to need a notice like this, okay? You have to warn them that the choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. And that has to be on every single advertisement that you have. And I put it on my website, and then I got around to making a blog, and I was so annoyed by this because it's really insulting to my clients.
Yeah.
I mean, they read that and go, how stupid do you think I am? So I took that little notice and I got a tag like you would see hanging off of a bed in a mattress store. You know, and of course they have the do not remove under penalty of the law. I had this chintzy looking tag that I put up on my blog that said caution, and then I had the warning, and then below it in bold red type, do not remove this tag under penalty of the law. And above it, I put the Supreme Court requires the following notice, just to make sure everybody knew that this wasn't my stupid idea. I didn't know what else I could do to show my displeasure except to make a joke out of it.
Isn't that a little bit like what we were talking about that Jesus and Paul did in reference to the Roman government? Isn't that kind of along the same lines?
I'm just doing the best I can while retaining my law license, you know. I'm complying in the letter, if not in the spirit.
Give unto the Supreme Court the honor that they are due and not a drop more.
I wish them all of the respect and honor that they're due. And, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, what anyone is due is probably a very fluid thing. And when I'm told
and rather
to do
subjective as well.
Well, yeah, but when I'm told to do something as mindless as this, then maybe that's not a real high moment. But then, you know, if they say something that's wise, I'll go with that. Credit where credit is due. Not in this particular case.
Being down here,
it's not just my Supreme Court; they're all over the place.
Being down here in Southern Alabama, we have the wonderful luxury. I don't watch a lot of TV, but my wife, there's a couple shows that my wife really likes on television. And in Southern Alabama, it seems like every commercial break, if there are, let's say there's going to be six commercials on a commercial break on television, you can bet hard cash money that of those six commercials, at least four of them are going to be attorney commercials for injury attorneys. And I don't know if there's something about Alabama law.
The
or
hurt
if
line.
Yeah.
We have that here, too. We have that here, too.
I don't know if there's something about the highways that go through this area or what. If there, you know, if there's a traffic issue in this part of the country or whatever. But they are literally, of six commercials in a commercial break, four to five of them are going to be attorneys. And they all have, they all say
personal injury.
Yeah. And they all say the same things, like, if we don't win your case, you don't owe us a dime. Well, of course not. That's always how it is. You know, every attorney I've ever dealt with was like that. And, you know, but they have some really inventive commercials. This one guy, it shows him he's got a whole series with him and his deer rifle, and he's got a 30-06 deer rifle. And he says, I'm not looking for a couple does. I'm going to get the big bucks. And then he aims his rifle, you know. And then it shows him with this sledgehammer, and there's this a slot machine behind him. And he says something to the effect of, the insurance companies don't want to pay you, but I'll make them pay. And he smashes this this slot machine with the sledgehammer because he's the hammer.
Awesome.
It's wonderful.
Money flies.
The Alabama hammer.
Yeah, that's what he calls himself. And there's another guy that's really inventive. He has this one where he's walking along talking, and it sounds very official. And he says... he's walking along, and he's in this jail. He's in the walkway outside of the actual jail cells. And he says something about, you know, we're going to lock up those insurance companies and make them give you what they owe you. And as he's walking by, you see into the jail cell, and there's this Flo character and the Mayhem character that's in one of the other insurance, and the cavemen, and they're all locked up in this cell. And he bangs on the wall and says, quiet down or you're going back in the hole. It's wonderfully inventive.
That's awesome.
You know, those things are so outrageous that in Better Call Saul, I think at their website, and we've seen some of his commercials on TV, it's probably very difficult for their writers to be even as outrageous as the ones that you see on real TV.
Yeah. That Better Call Saul is what really sparked my interest in that. And then seeing that there's real attorneys that are doing that, it's just hilarious.
That do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, go ahead.
And the hottie-totty, as Randy put it earlier, the highfalutin attorneys are like, you know, they definitely look down their nose at that.
They wouldn't go anywhere near it. I assume that they are marketing themselves to what they perceive as their target audience. And that
the people that are watching those shows don't have many teeth,
you know, and
not your wife, Ben, not Cindy.
No, you know, I'm talking. We have hillbillies here in Missouri, and
got them here too. They're everywhere. You know. Yeah, I definitely see. I see those kind of commercials on TV sometimes when I'm just sitting here. You know, just flipping channels or whatever. They come on a lot.
I appreciate that kind of advertising, though, the sort of over-the-top comedy advertising. I appreciate that so much better than the ones where, you know, the pharmaceutical company has this beautiful setting and the lady's riding her horse or whatever, and it's just wonderful. And they're like, oh, this drug will save your life. It'll make your life so much better and everything. And then they give you 15 seconds of wonderful rainbows and butterflies. And then they give you 45 seconds of, you know, it'll make your kidneys fail. It might give you cancer. Your eyes might pop out. Yeah.
Death.
And you're like, all this just so I can clear up my acne? Come on. I don't want that. I don't want to risk those horrible things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's almost like what's it called? Bait and switch. It's not really. It doesn't really qualify as a bait and switch. But it's kind of like that. It's like, la, 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 la. Careful, don't
die. The bait and switch is that their happy drug are the thing that they're supposed to be cured. You're switching over for all these horrible side effects at the end of the commercial. I mean, I wonder if they've done research as to how people catch that. That's horrible. I mean, you may get clued in that you pay more attention to the side effects at the end. I do.
Right. I do.
Well, it's actually, I think it's regulation from the FDA that that says that they have to list out all those potential side effects like that.
Oh, I would guess that. And if it wasn't the FDA, it would be simply the tort laws that held them responsible if they didn't warn people, I suppose.
Well, we're going to be back right after this trip to the market, and we have redemption in the third act, although I don't know if we need all that much redemption from this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm. freedomfiends.fm.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
It is, has not gotten out of the 50s here today.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Oh, I walked all over
Freedom
you.
Freedom Fiends, okay. Freedom Fiends.
That's okay. That's
my
what we do.
Apologies, of course. Yes, it is what we do. We nothing is scripted.
If we were on Skype, we wouldn't be able to do that. But we're on Fiend Phone.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a real boon to the program that everyone can speak at once. Whereas on Skype arbitrarily decides, what is it, the loudest person is the one that you hear?
I think it's the best
I
signal.
I think so, yeah.
I think it takes the best signal.
Oh, the best signal. Okay. Well, that is somewhat arbitrary, but I guess I understand it. Hey, we don't have a lot of time left before the end, but I was going to mention, a lot of people may have heard of this, but everyone needs to hear about it. There was a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, which in the last week or so, handed down.
Handed down from upon high.
I know. I when I first went to law school, and they said, you know, they don't hand them over, they don't hand them out, they hand them down, just so everybody knows what their position is in this whole scheme of things. But there's a case, Rodriguez versus the United States, and this is one where a cop pulled over this fellow named Rodriguez for a minor traffic offense.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets his license and registration, issues the guy a warning ticket, and then after the whole stop really is over, he asks him for permission to get his drug dog out and take a sniff around the car. And Mr. Rodriguez, wise man that he was, said, "No, are you done? I'm leaving."
Heck no.
And the cop said, "You're not leaving." Made it and called for backup, even though he had the drug dog there. Calls for backup. And when the dog gets there, about 7 or 8 minutes had passed since the stop was concluded and that warning ticket had been issued. And the Supreme Court, they threw the conviction out. They said a cop's job in a traffic stop typically includes only issues that involve the safe operation of a motor vehicle. So you would check for a license. You would check and see if there are any outstanding warrants against the driver. I guess warrants for like dangerous driving or something. So it would be related to operating a motor vehicle. And inspecting the car's registration or proof of insurance, that sort of thing. And they said, they said a dog sniff is not part of an officer's traffic mission.
Wow.
And said unless the cop had some reasonable fact-based suspicion that some further criminal activity was afoot beyond the violation, like speeding or something, he can't prolong the spot beyond the time necessary needed to complete that investigation, that transaction. And said that stop ended the moment he handed the warning ticket over. And that was really good because it was after that the dog sniffed, found the drugs in the car, and this guy was on his way to federal prison. And they said the stop ends as soon as the investigation concludes. And then they added a little caveat that a lot of cops, cutesy kind of like they are, the way they think they can outsmart everybody, they would do the sniff in the middle of the stop before they handed out the ticket. They would do their searching, sniffing, and delaying you unjustifiably. And so the court went on to say, it concludes when the investigation concludes, or as soon as the investigation ought to have concluded, whichever comes first. So if you add some time in the middle that isn't warranted, you're thrown out anyway. And so said, you know, the cop cannot extend the length of the detention, whether it's during or after the stop, unless he has additional evidence of a crime. And even a very, very brief delay is illegal.
Wow.
And this is really a good thing and emphasizes the
they
one
did something
bit of,
good. Yay.
Yeah. And the one bit of legal advice that I feel comfortable handing out anywhere in this country, well, except at an airport when you're trying to get on an airplane, is never agree to a search. Never, never, ever agree to a search of any kind.
Yeah, because like
know, there's
you say,
no reason.
Like you say, Randy, if they have the right to search you, they're going to search you.
Yeah, that's right.
If they have the right, they will. And when they go into court, they want to have as many excuses why their search was legal. And even if they have one, they may have an excuse to search you, some legal grounds. That might be fought out in court, but if you give consent, the game is over and you lose. And I think we're out of time, aren't we?
That was really good timing, though.
Yeah, it's been fun talking to you guys today, though.
Yeah.
You bet.
I've really enjoyed this.
We'll have to do this again.
We will.
Absolutely.
Next time.
Randy England, Diana, and me, Ben Stone. With the Freedom Fiends. Hopefully we'll get Michael into one of these days as he gets better and better.
Yes, you bet. Worms.
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 You know, I like that ending music so much.
Yeah, me too.